I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation cure master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
All right, it's Thursday, 1 o'clock. We all know what that means. It's time for the Farm Report.
Farm Report Radio.
Awesome. Heather, welcome back. How was Florida?
Miami. It was a trip. Oh, man. I was down there hanging out. Oh, I definitely was not hanging out. I was working my butt off with the crew here from Roberta's. We had all the major players from this restaurant down there. Kind of just changing the way you get your food at any kind of big event. This one was Art Scope. So we want to give a big shout out to the guys at Art Scope for having us down there and really getting to serve up food the way it should be, not out of a little closed plastic box where you don't really see how it's getting made. We were serving up yakitori sandwiches, some heritage pulled pork on coconut rice, really just having a good time. We had some of the amazing drip blue bottle coffee up there, so people were just having a good time, and so were we. So we really look forward to kind of just doing some more of these festivals and being on the circuit and really changing the way festival food is brought to you. So Roberta's kicked ass down there. Thanks to Art Scope for letting us do our thing. And
Cool. Welcome back. It's good to have you back in studio.
Be here for sure.
Also in studio, we are excited to have Gabby Blavatsky. Gabby, like many of our guests, wears approximately 1 to 2 million hats. Most notably, she is currently a master's student at NYU Wagner School of Public Service. She's focusing on public administration with a particular concentration on non-for-profit management and policy. She also works as a legislative aide in the policy division for Councilwoman Christine Quinn. And we're excited to kind of hear more about both of those things and kind of tuck into FoodWorks, a vision to improve New York City's food system, which is a 59-point plan that the Quinn's office has just launched looking at the food system in New York. So, Gabby, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So curious, how did you kind of get into this role? I mean, you were at Wagner, you're working for Quinn's office. You also used to work as a market manager. Give us a little history.
I did. So I moved here a few years ago and started at Wagner. And I originally came to this school really interested in environmental justice issues. And the more I started studying the issues, the more I realized how much food was involved in environmental justice and the production of food. And so I just started looking around the city for jobs that were available in, you know, the food world here in New York. And the economy wasn't great, so I was, you know, kind of looking around initially for internships and stuff, and eventually I found an unpaid one with Green Market, which I was super excited to get. And I was there for about 6 months working with their market outreach coordinator, and they asked me if I wanted to run one of their farmers markets for them. So that's how I initially got on board. And from there, I ran the Rockefeller Center Market, the Grand Street Market, and then I got introduced to Bob Lewis.
Right.
Bob Lewis. So he, as you know, started farmers markets in New York City. He's an amazing man. And I ended up interning for him this last summer at the New York State Department of Ag and Market. And through him, I met,
awesome.
You know, it's one of those things. Through him, I met Sarah Brannon, who works for Speaker Quinn's office. And actually, she had an internship position opening. And the rest is
history. So you're in school part-time working part-time, kind of both. All the balls are in the air.
All the balls are in the air.
And trying to change the world as you do it.
Yeah, trying. Slowly but surely.
So I've been reading through the report, and I just want to, like, touch base about a couple of things that I found really surprising. For example, the price per calorie of zucchini and lettuce is 100 times greater than the price per calorie of sugar or butter. New Yorkers are consuming more calories each day than we did a generation ago, largely because it has become easier and cheaper to consume higher calorie and unhealthy foods.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that New York State was nationally the second highest producer of cabbage.
Yep.
That's why we have so much coleslaw. You know, the Jewish delis in New York City.
Oh, they're
you know?
A thriving marketplace. Also,
sauerkraut.
Yes, I forgot.
That the city is second only to the Department of Defense in purchasing of institutional meals. I think, like, so many factors in this report. So, Heather, why don't you take us through the five steps?
Yeah, there are five steps of this report, which are actually five things that we like to make sure we always represent on the Farm Report, and mm-hmm. these people that come in every single week that we talk to touch on or work most importantly with them, which would be agricultural production, processing, distribution, consumption, and post-consumption. So these five phases, and you know, as Erin had just mentioned, some of her, you know, things that stood out to her all take, I would assume, a lot of research and energy. And you know, you're a student, and we kind of were wondering about how, you know, higher education plays a role in this, or how you kind of gather all this information to create a report like this. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about who was involved in working on this report and how we got to be able to talk about all these 5 points.
Well, there are a lot of different ways we got information. So there, you know, Sarah Brannon, she's the woman I work for there at the council. She's a head, you know, a senior policy advisor there. She really guided this research. So she, you know, she decided, you know, what we should look for, what kind of information she wanted. So with her direction, I, you know, of course, using skills I've learned at school for research and a lot of the huge NYU, you know, online research directory that they have, I've looked for a lot of scholarly journals, peer-reviewed journals, and that's where we got the majority of our information from. So it's just a matter of, like, literally reading dozens and dozens and dozens of journals to find the information that we wanted that really explained the problem, you know, found in our food system, and also offered, you know, research-backed data for, you know, the recommendations and the, you know, solutions we were looking for. In addition to that, there were nine different stakeholders in the community that are, you know, really influential here in New York City that Sarah put together. It's called the Food System Advisory Committee. We put together, and those included Hillary Baum from the Baum Forum. There was Nevin Cohen, who, you know, from the New School.
And a guest on the show.
Definitely, yeah. Yep.
He's great. And there's Joel Berg from New York City Coalition Against Hunger, Michael Kennard from the Urban Design Lab at Columbia, Bob Lewis, who I mentioned before, Christina Grace, Ruth Katz from Stone Barn Center, Fern Grail Ostro, and Karen Karp from Karp Resources. And so they all, you know, they were kind of the people that we vetted the information through, and who gave us a lot of recommendations as well. So they were really crucial in getting a lot of this research.
That was one of the things that was mentioned in the report, and I think something I've been thinking about as a grad student as well is the kind of lack of research or lack of kind of basic data with regards to food systems and food in cities. We've talked a little bit about that with regards to agriculture production. I know Mara Gittleman has been on the show talking about kind of mapping food production in the city.
Yeah, she did those amazing community garden maps all over the city. They're incredible.
Yeah, so what do you think is the role for graduate or PhD student and, like, higher education as far as we're looking to kind of build a basis of data?
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, my experience has been that just using my, you know, analytical skills, just going through all of this information and, you know, using your graduate training, like, figuring out what's important, what's not, like, being able to really analyze the reports and journals that you read, like, you know, is this, what makes this, you know, information good or bad or trustworthy or not, and mm-hmm. just really being able to back up, you know, the policies you want to pursue, like, you need to have that you need to be able to trust that base of
put it through that filter.
Exactly.
So you started also at Wagner. You were kind of instrumental in launching is it a food policy group, or what's the student group that you're a part of?
It's called the Wagner Food Policy Alliance. It's a small group, but we've put on actually a lot of different events on campus. We've been doing some speaker panels. We actually just most recently did a collaborative happy hour, which you were part of.
Yes.
Of different food-minded graduate students around the city, along with Columbia's Mailman School and a few others. So
speaking for someone that's so interested in being a part of something like this, I mean, is this open to people who aren't students as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. We're just trying to, it's like you're talking about, just trying to figure out like what is the role for grad students like this in this world? Like, how do we penetrate, this policy world and make a difference? And I think just making, it's all about who you know, and just making these connections with each other, like, hopefully eventually one day we'll all be colleagues working in this field. Yeah. So making those connections early is really important.
And I guess just like any other kind of school-based thing, I mean, there's so many people that aren't necessarily in your program that really are interested in this, but
yeah,
can't take a class in food policy or something like that because it just doesn't fit into their schedule.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Artists and musicians and people, of course, have as much interest. So please do, figure out a way. Let's get in touch and get more people involved in this.
Yeah, I'd love
this.
To.
So how can people actually learn more about where these happy hours would be or the next meeting so they can get involved?
We're trying to figure that out right now. I think what we're going to end up doing is putting together a blog, a collaborative blog for the group, so I can update you in the future about where, that blog will be, what the address will be. So
perfect.
I'll let you know.
Definitely.
You just kind of tossed that idea around, I think, 2 days ago.
Yeah, it was like
it's very new.
The mass group email.
Right,
of like,
exactly.
When can we all meet? And I think another kind of really important thing to think about with regards to, there's a lot of energy in the city amongst people with totally different backgrounds. And one of the great opportunities for getting together is looking for ways to educate those people about some of the real issues with regards to, sustainable farming in the Northeast and in different parts of the country. And one of the things that I thought was so great about the report is you guys really have kind of revered representatives like Bob, like Christina, from the New York State Department of Ag and Markets on to create a voice as you're putting the policy together. So that was awesome. We're going to take a break in a quick sec here.
Lots more to talk about when we come back. We need to know what's next. We're excited. We'll be right back on the Farm Report.
This is a message from our friends at TechServe and the Lower East Side Ecology Center. The Ecology Center is rolling out its 8th annual After the Holidays e-waste events, with 10 events scheduled in January 2011 to help you responsibly dispose of all your unwanted or broken gadgets. Help meet their goal of collecting 100 tons this January by spreading the word to your friends and neighbors. For more information, visit www.lesecologycenter.org. Again, this has been a message from the Lower East Side Ecology Center and our friends at TechServe. The song you've been listening to is Fish Cakes by Rectech, Bushwick's very own Rectech, and you can hear more from Rectech at rectech.bandcamp.com. His EP will be coming out on Fancy Restaurant Records January 14th. Back to you guys.
Awesome. Welcome back to the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. We are in studio with Gabby Blavinsky. I always want to add an IN to it. What is my problem?
Blavatsky.
Blavatsky. Okay, Blavatsky. Like, all of my Polish relatives are like you know, they want to be represented too.
Yeah, I understand.
But they're not here. So so the report launched, 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
November 22nd.
November 22nd. Awesome. And it was at the Food and Finance High School. I had no idea. There's like an entire high school.
I would have loved to be there.
Yeah, it was cool.
That blows me away about New York City is I'm from San Francisco and we never had specialized high schools on the level that New York has. Yeah. It's crazy.
There's yeah, you walked into the school and like through the metal detector and there's high school kids running around in chef coats, yeah. learning about aquaponics, learning about restaurant management at a high school level. It was exciting. I thought that was such a smart choice for the launch.
Definitely.
So we want to kind of tuck into the report a little bit. We're going to work our way through, and I would just love to hear some of the things that were highlights for you. We'll start with the agriculture production. What were some of the points that you guys worked on for that you're kind of particularly excited about?
I think just learning about just the fact that how much food New York State produces was just unbelievable to me. You never think of New York State as being this like huge agricultural state. You meet people at farmers markets and they don't even know that there's farms here. And we're,
oh my gosh,
you know, and it's crazy. And we're a huge producer. So yeah, just learning about, you know, how many products we produce, how much dairy we produce. That yes. was a huge
yeah,
factor.
Yeah, third in the nation yeah, for dairy production.
Pretty amazing.
Second for apple.
Yep.
Behind that Washington. I would have guessed. I went apple picking my whole life. I am a native New Yorker, so that's one thing.
Yeah, big on apples.
Definitely.
As far, yeah, and just how huge organics are in this state. You know, we're one of the leaders in organics, and how huge we are in this local food movement, which, you know, is the reason a lot of us are sitting in this
Such
room.
Trendsetters.
Yeah, seriously.
But we have to keep that up. Otherwise, who else is going to spread the good word?
Definitely. And, you know, that's unusual in the country. Even though the United States produces so much agriculture, New York is really in the forefront of a lot of these issues. So
and diversified. So very, let's just yeah. keep it that way.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I thought was great about the report kind of across the board is you guys really set things in a historical context. So not only are you talking about the proposals that you think are great for New York City, but you're also like, where does New York stand nationally? You touch on the farm bill. And you talk a little bit about farmland protection, which has been an issue we've talked about on the show. Mm-hmm. I was shocked that there's been a 70.1% drop in the number of farms and a 76.8% loss of farmland acres mm-hmm. over the last, 50 years? That's insane.
It's huge.
And I guess, you know, it wasn't totally shocking to me that we're losing farmland, but that compared to the rest of the nation, you know, New York has lost 70%, and the national average is 20. Like, come on, New York. Like, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, just if you think about the fact that, you know, Queens was largely an agricultural borough up until the 1930s, like we've just been urbanizing so much faster than a lot of the country. So I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, sprawl and development has really accelerated that. But if you look around the country, yeah, it's pretty consistent with the rate of like farmland loss
wow.
around the United States.
I would say too, like, one of the things that the report, I think also it gives us a great opportunity to start this conversation among New Yorkers about what is the role for urban constituents and what do you think is the role for urban constituents? I mean, how can we living in the city really affect change?
I think it's through purchasing power. You know, upstate farmers, they really depend on the city for selling what they produce. We're the biggest market for them, you know, and we support what they do through, you know, supporting their families and giving, allowing them to continue production every single year. So I think that, you know, but that buy local is
voting with your dollars.
Voting exactly. with your dollars.
It's one of our favorite things to say.
It's
here.
Very true.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the next things, you know, we said we're going to go through these five phases of the food system, something that interests us so much. And we always talk about when is this next slaughterhouse going to open in New York State? But processing, I mean, on agricultural level, there's lots of different processing that needs to happen. What in this report about processing are we most excited about?
Trying to get a lot more, yeah, like you said, processors, local processors in the city, trying to, processing is actually one of New York City's biggest industries as it is. So mm-hmm. really just trying to support the businesses that exist here. You know, the land is so expensive in New York City, and it's really hard for a lot of these manufacturers to stay, you know, competitive because they have to pay ridiculous rent sometimes, and a lot of them, you know, look to move to New Jersey, unfortunately. So we're really, the city is really trying to do a lot to, like, you know, help them find available space. And we're putting together, the city's putting together a business-to-business conference eventually is one of the proposals, to match food manufacturers with, you know, people who have available space and who want to buy from them. So
I guess it's just making that information more available to the people who need it.
Exactly. And helping small businesses, family businesses when you can.
Awesome. Can you give us an example of, like, processing? Like, what are some of the...
What is one of the processing facilities that we're talking about?
So something like Damascus Bakery is a huge one in Brooklyn. It's enormous, and it's a Syrian family that started it, and I think in the 1930s, and it's been here forever, and it's one of the biggest in the city. So but New York, when it comes to processing, it's mostly bakeries. That's what we're really known for. And specialty goods, and surprisingly, chocolate is huge in the city, which I didn't know before.
Yeah,
doing this research.
And I come from like a meat background pretty much at this point. Well, I've developed a meat background, but, you know, Pat LaFreda Meats just moved to New Jersey. They're one of our biggest distributors here in the city. Salumeria Bialesi just moved from New York City to New Jersey. So yeah, I guess when you bring this up, it is kind of sad to hear that that's happening. We can't lose our identity just because of rent.
Well, and there's something, all those city planning issues where zoning and building codes and tax incentives. I mean, you kind of get into the nitty gritty of, like, how do you incentivize or disincentivize some of this production?
Yeah. Well, let's, I guess, move on to distribution, as I just brought up one of our favorite distributors.
Pat LaFreda. Yeah, so this was actually my favorite part of the report. You guys talk a lot about Hunts Point. Yeah. What are some of the issues up there? What's going on at Hunts Point? It's not an area that I think about, but belatedly, I was like, should be.
There was that 2% statistic about only 2% of the food at Hunts Point is actually coming from New York or something.
Right. Yeah. It's I didn't know that Hunts Point existed before doing this report either. I had no idea. And it's crazy because, there's so much of our food from the city. A lot of the food that's distributed around the country comes through Hunts Point. And
let's just back up a second. Yeah. Just for people who also might not be aware, what is Hunts Point?
It's a food distribution site. So, you know, food comes in from farmers around the country, and people come to purchase it wholesale for their stores, for, you know, anything, anywhere where you, if there's a bodega and it has oranges, those oranges probably came from Hunts Point.
So it's kind of a centralized, everything comes there and gets redistributed and goes throughout, just into New York City or like throughout the region?
Throughout the country, throughout the city. It's a huge aggregation site for farmers all over the place. Some of it comes from, you know, international sources. It's huge. And the issues that, you know, I found in my research doing this was, for example, there's a lot of, it's just really over capacity as far as, like, I think it was built in the 1960s, and since then they didn't really anticipate, you know, how much use was going to grow. And so they started putting these gasoline or diesel powered what are they? They're like storage facilities.
Like the refrigeration.
The refrigeration trucks. And they run constantly to stay cold. And they're storing food out there. And I can't even imagine, like, what the pollution is as a result. And, you know, South Bronx, you know, is right in the Hunts Point. Hunts Point is in South Bronx. And they have the highest asthma rates in the city. And,
interesting.
And it's, you know, a huge environmental justice issue. And it's just, it's not sustainable to keep those things running constantly.
Awesome. So kind of the focus is to look at what building, moving it.
Expanding capacity is one of the proposals. Redeveloping it so that they don't have to rely on this heavily polluting.
Yeah, can you imagine
storage,
like a big shared, like, refrigerated space downtown or something? I mean, you never know, but, like, we could rent out slots or something in, like, a big warehouse, and everyone gets to come in and out. I mean, we try and talk about how we're kind of, like, in the farming world, not in competition with each other. Mm-hmm. So we just have to figure out a way to bring people together in, you know, more ways. And
definitely
talking about sharing a refrigerator can be one of them.
And that's something that needs definitely to be done, is just figuring out, like, what is the most efficient way to get food in and out of New York City. And, you know, a lot of that, it still remains to be studied.
8 million people to feed.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Jeez, man. Well, consumption, 8 million people to feed. What are we going to do about this consumption and then post-consumption issue when we talk about this report? I mean, what are we trying to kind of get at here?
Well, you know, there's a ton of proposals in this section, but a lot, you know, there's, we're trying to take advantage more of the FRESH program.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the proposals that, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but it was last year, it came about, where, you know, targeting food deserts in the city and trying to get more grocery stores there, try to make more healthy food available for people. In addition to supplying more healthy food, the report really highlights getting, you know, trying to create healthier food environments through less fast food in neighborhoods. You know, through like the research that I did for this report, we found a lot of studies that showed that fast food restaurants actually target schools because kids have disposable income in some
sense. So they like
sense.
Set up outside the school and they're like, hey kid, come here, eat my burger.
I mean, I don't want to believe that it's that like, you know, evil, but it's statistically significant. There's a lot of studies that show it's, you know, when you look at around the city, like it's not randomized. They're actually just surrounding, especially high schools, high schools of color.
I mean, just look, when you're like walking around the city at 3:30 in the afternoon and you walk past some McDonald's, unfortunately, I mean, it's the hangout.
Filled with kids, right?
It is. Yeah. It's so sad.
I live in Bushwick and there's a high school right around the corner from me. And when I walk out of my house, the first thing the kids do is walk into McDonald's. Yeah. Walk into McDonald's, walk into like the Chinese spot with all of the fried food. And it's, you know, you want to be like, no, I know.
I remember I used to think it was bad in the grocery store seeing like all the frosted like cereals like at eye level, like, you know, for the kids. But it's just getting worse with more money.
And it's hard because you can't control what kids you can control what kids eat in school. But as soon as they leave, they're in, you know, independent operators. So, you know, I guess the best that we can do is just really try to create more healthy options for them.
Well, that, and I think the city council can play a big role in what the neighborhood looks like and what kids have access to with regards to where they can buy food, but also do they have adequate spaces to play and exercise? And
yeah, definitely.
Is it safe for them to like be outside and doing more kind of physical stuff? The other big kind of component of this, just kind of harkening back to last week when we had Alexis Stevens from Green Markets on, is the city council's support for SNAP, the food stamp benefits, has been huge. And I'm glad to see that that's something that you guys are looking to grow.
Yeah, that's Christine Quinn. That was one of her major initiatives, is to get more EBT at farmers markets around the city. And that's something we're really, you know, the report really pushes, is trying to take advantage of that more. It's been such a successful program. The farmers win. They make so much more money. You know, people
$500,000 is the number I think they're on target for this year.
It's amazing. You know, and that's a huge difference to those guys, and just how much more food you can bring home as a result of all that fresh produce.
Well, we have a few more minutes. We're going to talk before we head out a little bit about post-consumption, kind of one of the less sexy aspects of the food system.
It's been a very popular discussion lately. I mean, we spoke to Ben Flanner a bit about post-consumption, and then I'm going to give a little shout-out to post-consumption in just a bit. So let's hear what this report covered for us first.
So, you know, the report really highlights composting and recycling,
yay,
which is super exciting. Coming from San Francisco, growing up, you know, in the past, well, actually not growing up, but over the past few years, they've really developed composting program.
Your garbage cans are so awesome in San Fran.
I know, but then realistically, you have to look at the fact that San Francisco's tiny. You know, there's a lot of issues there. But yeah, really trying to get composting, household composting going in the city, trying to get citywide composting going for grocery stores, things like that, that, you know, just have so much food coming in and out of their restaurants. And then reducing packaging on food procured by the city agency, and the city agency is setting a good example for, you know, in trying to influence, like, you know, what is food is packaged.
That's
in.
Like a funny way to think about post-consumption, pre-consumption.
But exactly.
That totally makes sense.
Pre-cycling.
I mean, I know for like the Batali restaurant group, they have someone, Elizabeth Meltz, committed to talking with the people they buy from, and asking that the way that they bring the food to them be in, you know, not huge styrofoam containers, and making a change on that level as a buyer too. As you said, you know, we vote with our dollar.
Right.
They want to change the way their food comes to them so they can have a bigger impact when they have to throw it out.
Exactly. And you said, like, the statistic, you know, New York City is the second largest purchaser of food to the Department of Defense. And when you think that we have that much purchasing power, and when a city like the size of New York requests something like less packaging on their food, people will listen.
People will listen. They listen to us, yeah. New Yorkers.
It's exciting.
So I want to wrap up, but, you know, we've obviously just very loosely touched on a couple of the 59 proposals listed in this report. Where can people read the report?
Right now, you could take a look and download it for yourself at council.nyc.gov. And you'll be able to see it on there. The Food Works, a vision to improve New York City's food system. As things you know, continue to unfold, we hope to have Gabby back and maybe even Christine C. Quinn herself, and you know, really learn more about how we're changing the food system here in New York City, because there's lots to be done. And as you guys say in the report, we're hoping to create jobs, and we're really hoping to make a change. So that's what the Farm Report is all about supporting.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then everyone, next Friday, if you're around, December 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Third Ward, we'll be throwing a launch party and panel discussion on composting and urban foods for the landfill zine, which will be printed on 100% edible, non-toxic paper. So you could then go ahead and compost your recipes after you go ahead and check them all out. So maybe see you at the Third Ward next Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. to celebrate landfill, the zine's launch.
And join us next week for Dan Gibson from Grazing Angus here on the Farm Report.
All right, thanks, Jack.